welcome in. It is the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Hope everyone had a great weekend. The weather cooperated a little bit, but I guess that's, par for the course when it comes to the month of April. It's almost May. We're almost to May 1st. Just a few more days. And I guess they say what? April comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. So hopefully that will be the case in 2021 as well. Today's show's one I've been wanting to do for a while, but I figured it wouldn't be relevant for a few more months, or at least, I don't know, top of mind for a while. But then I saw Yahoo Sports' Dan Wetzel tweet this the other day about the college football playoff, and I got kind of excited. The college football playoff, this is from Dan Wetzel, earlier, I guess it was late last week, I should say. The college football playoff is considering various expansion plans, including 6, 8, 10, 12, and 16 team options. And he then, I guess, kind of quote tweeted a memo that he somehow obtained. And I'm just going to read it as it was posted again by Yahoo Sports college football insider Dan Wetzel. In addition, the committee received a briefing from a working group of four of its members charged with considering options for the future format of the playoff for the management committee's review. Hancock, Bill Hancock, who runs, he's the chairman of the college football playoff. He said, first and foremost, the working group conveyed to the management committee that it continues to support and believe in the 14 playoff as it is currently constituted. Well, there's your first mistake. But in its analysis, the working group has reviewed some 63 possibilities for change. These included 6, 8, 10, 12, and 16 team options, each with a variety of different scenarios. The group informed the management committee that it continues to work and anticipates making a report to the management committee about the future format at an upcoming meeting. Quote, since January 2019, when the president's charged us with taking a careful look at all aspects of CFP, college football playoff, including the format, this group has diligently evaluated options for the future. Its efforts were delayed as a result of the pandemic, but it met again this week in Dallas, and we look forward to hearing more when its work is complete. Quote, I want to remind everyone that whatever recommendations the management committee may take, all decisions about our future format, whether to remain at four teams or change to a different format, will be made by the 11 presidents and chancellors who manage the college football playoff. We are entering the eighth year of our 12-year agreement for the college football playoff, and the management committee is extremely satisfied with the popularity and success of the CFP, Hancock said. Of course, he'd say that. It's his framework. It is wise and good management to review where we stand now as we discuss what the future might, for emphasis, look like, end quote. Okay, so that's what Dan Wetzel tweeted out. That was followed up by the story that then came out giving us a little bit of maybe more texture to the issue. And this was written by Ben Kercheval from ESPN. College football playoff expansion appears inevitable as management committee mulls alternative formats. Now, that's a little bit different than what that memo said, where Bill Hancock said, we think this is doing just fine for everybody. But it's not for many of the schools that are involved, many of the conferences that are involved, and certainly it's terribly unpopular for the fans of college football, except for those schools, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, that always seem to be in the college football playoff. But nevertheless, this is what Ben Kercheval wrote on April 23rd. So what was that? Thursday, Friday? The college football playoff is going to expand. It's just a matter of when and how. That isn't terribly groundbreaking in and of itself, but in a statement Friday, the playoff committee basically confirmed change was coming to its postseason format without coming out and explicitly saying so. Following 2 days of virtual meetings, the committee announced a working group of four of its members had reviewed 63 possibilities for change, with fields of 6, 8, 10, 12, and 16 teams under consideration. But in true playoff fashion, committee executive director Bill Hancock told ESPN's playoff liaison Heather Dinich that nothing was imminent. Quote, there will not be a new format this season or next season, Hancock said. Quote, the timetable is certainly an important detail, but it hasn't been determined yet. It's too soon to predict the timing, but even if the board decides to alter the format, it may well not occur until after the current agreement has expired, which isn't until after the 2025 season. Back to the story, out of the quote. With all due respect to Hancock, tapping the brakes is useless, and college football power brokers are talking out of both sides of their mouths. That the committee is even looking at expansion possibilities at all, let alone 63 of them, is a solid indicator that change is coming to the postseason of college football's highest level. Playoff expansion has always been a talking point ever since the format's first year in 2014. Well, we went back further than that. We'll get to that in a minute. But decision makers have never really offered unified specific alternatives, opting usually instead to respond with vague notions. Playoff fatigue, something I talked about a minute ago. Playoff fatigue is also becoming a more prevalent thing with a handful of the same teams, namely Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma, making the field in most years. Future expansion for the playoff has long been tied to the next round of TV contract negotiations, but in publicly coming out with viable alternatives, however many there may be, the committee has essentially confirmed that the writing is on the walls. It would be surprising for the playoff folks to deliver alternatives in the most explicit detail, yet only to backtrack. To Hancock's point, a new format probably won't happen this year or next, but it is coming. Even he can't downplay it that much anymore, and when he does, the key point won't necessarily be the number of teams, but how they're chosen. That was the story that moved on Friday by Ben Kercheval from ESPN. So usually these controversies wind up surrounding Ohio State. Let's just kind of go back into the Wayback Machine. Let's go back to 2014. Ohio State made the field as the number four seed. Remember, that's where they cut it off. They cut it off at number four. But entering championship Saturday, where all the conference championship games are played in the Big Ten and the SEC and the Pac-12 and et cetera, et cetera. Entering championship Sunday, the 11-1 Buckeyes were ranked fifth in the college football playoff. They were two spots behind TCU. They were 10-1. And about to play a bad Iowa State in the Big 12. Ohio State had a Big Ten championship date with Wisconsin, who were number 13 at the time. Now, Ohio State had lost by 14, by two touchdowns at home to a Virginia Tech team. It was way back in week two, but Virginia Tech wasn't very good that year. They were okay. They were all right, but they were mediocre. TCU's loss was in week six to Baylor, an elite team in 2014, and they lost by 61-58. Both Ohio State and TCU just demolished the teams that they were going to play on championship weekend. That was the year that Ohio State boat raced Wisconsin 59-0. You might recall that, and if you're a Wisconsin football fan, you probably wanted to forget it, but it did happen. But that game for Ohio State was enough for them to leapfrog TCU, who tumbled all the way to number six. Baylor, by the way, moved up from sixth to fifth after matching TCU's strength of schedule, which doesn't make any sense either. Baylor and TCU settled as co-Big 12 champions, even though TCU won the conference championship game. And again, their one loss was to Baylor, so, I mean, that should be noted. But they settled as co-Big 12 champions, and even though Ohio State had the schedule strength advantage over both, let's face it, Ohio State only made it because they're Ohio State. Now the Big 12 was pissed off, and they installed a conference championship game in the hopes of avoiding that scenario again. Years later, though, the 2014 national champions remain the only team to leapfrog a championship weekend winner to make the playoff at the buzzer. The only one. Let's go to 2016, when this happened very similarly again. Ohio State became the first team to make the field despite not even winning its conference. They even were the number three seed. Until 2016, it was basically assumed that winning a conference title was basically, you've got to do that if you're going to get into the college football championship. Apparently not. the Buckeyes had lost at Penn State, which went on to win the conference championship game. But the Nittany Lions had two losses, and the committee, which had kept Ohio State above Penn State in the weeks leading up to Selection Sunday, maintained that the Buckeyes deserved the spot. The Nittany Lions were slotted fifth, two spots behind the team that they had beaten. Ohio State had no business being in the college football playoff in 2016, and they got blanked by Clemson in the semifinal. They got boat raced by Dabo and company. In 2017, it happened kind of in reverse, though. Ohio State finished number five, one spot out of the field. The Buckeyes were the only non-playoff team to have a serious case, but they missed out under the exact precedent that they helped set the year before. Ohio State won the Big Ten, but it had two losses, one at home to Oklahoma and one when they gave up 55 points to Iowa. The committee decided to take Alabama instead at number four. Alabama did not win their not only did Alabama not win the SEC, they didn't even win the SEC West. They didn't even win their division, much less their conference. Their one loss was to Auburn, who was really good that year. It just one controversy after another. This was also the year that UCF was undefeated, but the committee didn't care. Like, okay, great. And this was also the year that they went and I think they made championship rings. This was the year that they put up a banner until the NCAA said, yeah, take that down. You didn't win anything. Just go sit down. I mean, one after another, there's another controversy in 2018 that involved Notre Dame and Ohio State. And Georgia was in the mix as well. This past year was maybe the tipping point, and it was something we all saw coming 10 miles away if you were only paying attention to not only how the teams are selected, but everything that I've been talking about for the last 5 minutes. If you've been paying attention to history, you saw this coming. Undefeated Alabama. They were the one seed after they beat Florida in a close one. It was 52-46 in the SEC championship game on Saturday night. So Alabama's the number one seed. Now let's talk about Clemson. They lost a close game during the regular season at Notre Dame, and then in the ACC championship game, they throttled them 34-10. They were number two, and I don't think anybody had any issue with one and two. Alabama, Clemson. After that, though, things went all cattywampus. Ohio State at 6-0, remember, pandemic year. Ohio State was the Big Ten champion. They were the number three seed despite only playing six games. No one should have been surprised by this. The selection committee had the Buckeyes ranked in the top four since the season began. Ohio State looked a little bit shaky in their 22-10 win over Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game. But there are still those who thought it was unfair that Ohio State got in with only playing six games. Dabo wasn't happy about that. Notre Dame gets the number four spot despite losing to Clemson less than 24 hours before the announcement of the pairings. So Notre Dame gets the number four seed at 10-1. Notre Dame also beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And then there was Texas A&M on the outside looking in. Their only loss, Texas A&M, was to number one Alabama. Now they got creamed by Alabama. It was by 28 points. So that's a four-touchdown loss. That is a blowout. But Texas A&M felt they had made a convincing case by winning 8 of 9 games, all in the SEC. That included a 41-38 win over Florida. But the Aggies stayed at number five, and they took on North Carolina in the Orange Bowl instead. Can you tell me that Texas A&M is better than Notre Dame? No. Can you tell me that Texas A&M was better than Ohio State? No. Because they cut it off at four. And there are these controversies every single year. So how do we solve the problem while making it fair to everyone? Believe it or not, this is the same plan with very few tweaks that I've been touting for almost 20 years. Because remember the BCS mess? That was all the rage in 2004. In 1998, when the Bowl Championship Series was sold to all of us, it was billed as a way to avoid, once and for all, a split national championship, as it always would pit number one against number two in a series of four rotating bowl games. The Fiesta Sugar, Orange, and Rose Bowls would take turns hosting the national championship, with the other games on their off years hosting the best of the rest. But a question always persisted: what if multiple teams in the six elite conferences had just one loss? Then what? For several years, the BCS got lucky. It never happened, although to be sure, there have been some controversies. In 2000, Miami was outraged when they beat Florida State, but lost the number two BCS spot to Florida State by 0.34 points. In 2001, Colorado and Oregon were outraged when Nebraska slipped into the title game by a margin of 0.05 points. But nothing could have braced the lords of the BCS like the scenario that still hasn't quite sunk in for some USC fans. The 11-1 Trojans, after having spent the previous 2 weeks at number two in the BCS, were leapfrog for the second time this season, despite both a blowout win and, even more damning, a number one ranking in both the coaches poll and the AP poll. Instead of USC, the Sugar Bowl features Oklahoma and LSU, 1-2 in the BCS, but 3-2 respectively in both human polls. Trojans coach Pete Carroll said Sunday, if ever there was an argument for a playoff, this is it.
Obviously there is, sure. I mean, I think this is the most obvious illustration that you could possibly imagine. There's not even an argument for that. It's obvious that that's the fact. And so we'll see what happens with all of that, and I'm sure it'll generate change.
To be sure, the powers that be at least know it's an imperfect system. Consider, first, the BCS started with three computers in the formula, then expanded to seven. When Miami felt it got robbed in 2000, the BCS added a quality win component to the mix. A year later, after Oregon finished number two in the human polls but number four in the BCS, the commissioners demanded the margin of victory component be removed from the formula. But it never addressed the problem of three seemingly equally deserving teams vying for two spots, as is the case this year. USC Athletic Director Mike Garrett joined Sporting News Radio's Papa Joe Chevalier last night and said, BCS or not, there is still a title to be had.
We're not upset here very much. We were disappointed initially, but after we got our wits about us and realized what the terrain is, we're in pretty good shape. Number one, we're playing in the Rose Bowl, which is our favorite place to play. We're playing for the national championship as far as the Riders poll. And if we beat Michigan, and Michigan's a great team, we can get our version of it.
Pete Carroll agreed and said, as far as he's concerned, you can't cry over spilled sugar, and everything still could come up rosy.
I imagine if we're able to win the game, then we're going to be the AP national champion. You know, that's what we're figuring, and I don't know how we couldn't be. So, to us, this is a national championship game, and we're going to go for it. I think it's a great great aspect that has turned in just 24 hours for the Rose Bowl.
Despite all the controversies the BCS has brought college football fans, Garrett told Papa Joe, at least people care enough to speak out and to follow all of the games.
Many years, all I kept track of was the Big Ten and the Pac-10. And now you have to know what's going on in the ACC, the Big East, the Big 12.
Right.
And all the rest of them.
Yeah.
So, and then the other one is that it's sudden death playoff format. If you lose one game, you're out of it.
So, will the system change? It seems inevitable that at some point it will. The biggest winner in all of this year, the Rose Bowl, because they're hosting a de facto co-national championship game. That is, if USC wins. The biggest loser in all of this, the rest of us. For Sporting News Central, I'm Doug Russell.
So there's that blast from the past, but we're not done. More in a minute. Here's my plan, and it hasn't really changed much at all. I expand the playoffs to eight teams. Why eight? Because you got to cut it off somewhere. The NBA cuts it off at eight in each conference. The NFL is now at seven. You got to pick a spot. As we've all seen, four is too few, and there's a controversy every single year, and I think, in my opinion, 16 is too many. So I say eight. And here's how the spots get divvied up. Each Power 5 conference gets one automatic bid. Just one. Automatic bid. Regular season, conference championship, whatever. They can decide for themselves. You get one automatic bid. So the SEC, Big 10, ACC, Big 12, and Pac-12, they each get one representative every year and the payday that comes with it. Number two, the other three spots are at large spots that can come from anywhere, including the Power 5 or the Group of 5. That would have let in Texas A&M this past year, or maybe Coastal Carolina, or maybe a Cincinnati, or a UCF in years past, when it was 2014, when they were undefeated. Wherever. It doesn't matter. Now, there's a provision in my plan that if there's an undefeated group of five team, they get in. If you win all of your games like Central Florida did, you're in. If there are four group of five undefeateds, I guess that's why there's a committee. I doubt it would ever happen, but it might. It's possible. I can't sit here and tell you that it will never happen. I don't think it will ever happen, but it's within the realm of possibility. But if you're a group of five team and you win all of your games, including your conference championship game, there's a provision that you are in. So Central Florida, a few years ago when they were undefeated, they would have been in. That would have taken care of it. As has been done, this is the third part of it. As has been done in years past, the New Year's Six bowl games are your playoffs on a rotational basis. But here's how I would divvy it up. Now, again, this is rotating. So 1 year it's a 1-8. The next year it's a 2-7 for the Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl. You know, shuffle the deck however you need to shuffle the deck just to make sure that everyone gets, you know, a taste of the semifinals, the quarterfinals, and you know, what the pairings off would be. So, for example, this would be in year one. The Rose Bowl would feature the 1 seed versus the 8 seed. The Sugar Bowl would feature, like, for example, the 2 seed versus the 7 seed. The Fiesta Bowl, the 3 seed versus the 6 seed. The Cotton Bowl would then have the 4 seed versus the 5 seed. And then in years, subsequent years, you would shuffle that deck. You'd also shuffle the deck of, for example, in my plan, in this example, the Peach Bowl could take on the winner of the Rose Bowl versus the winner of the Cotton Bowl. That would mean that the Orange Bowl would take on the winner of the Sugar Bowl versus the winner of the Fiesta Bowl, and then you'd have your national championship game at a neutral site. What does all of this do? It makes all of the New Year's Six games relevant and critical. It also provides a mechanism for the group of five to possibly get in. It also guarantees that the Power Five won't be bitching at the end of the year. It adds exactly one game to the existing system for two teams. That's it. So this fear that they've talked about for years of extending the season indefinitely doesn't exist. In Division II and III, they add up to 5 games for the two teams that make it to the championship game. So I don't think it's a problem to add one game for two teams in football bowl subdivision, FBS. And here's my final element to all of this. You pay the players. Hard money checks. Cash money. $50,000 per game for each scholarship player. $10,000 for walk-ons. They're doing the work. They should directly benefit. Period. Not some credit at this place, that place. Don't talk to me about gifting suites or any of this other bullshit. Pay the players. Hard cash money checks. They're the ones that are making it. They're the ones who should get paid. P-A-I-D, paid. We have been talking about this plan for so long with such little progress.
College football, the new BCS standings are out. And while there were no major surprises or major changes, the formula that equals a trip to the Sugar Bowl for either USC or LSU remains ludicrous. With more, here's Doug Russell.
Cue the calliope music, because here we go again. A week ago, we told you the biggest game on the schedule this past Saturday was Alabama and Hawaii. This week, with no changes at the top of the BCS standings released last night, other than for obvious reasons, the USC and LSU games, respectively, the one college football contest the wonks will be setting their VCRs for, Notre Dame against Syracuse. The Trojans rooting for the Irish, the Tigers rooting for the Orangemen, because, of course, as you might remember, USC beat Notre Dame back on October 18th, and it all boils down to schedule strength. How about this one for a head-scratcher? Even if LSU beats Georgia in the SEC championship game on Saturday, it will actually hurt their chances to go to the Sugar Bowl. How, you might ask? Well, because already once this year, Georgia was beaten by LSU, and per BCS rules, a team cannot get a double-quality win bonus for beating a team twice in the same season. An LSU win, especially if it's a blowout, hurts Georgia's schedule strength rating, as well as its standings, possibly in the eyes of the human voters. Confused yet? You should be, but it's not without precedence. A similar situation played out 2 years ago when TCU beat Southern Miss, allowing Nebraska to hold on to the number 2 BCS spot by 5/100ths of a point. which was good enough to play for the national championship, despite not even winning the Big 12 North Division. Of course, if LSU loses, they're out altogether. But on the bright side, they would get additional quality win percentage points by virtue of their victory over the Bulldogs September 20th, but I doubt they want the trade-off. Tigers coach Nick Saban says the whole BCS mess has taken its toll on his team.
I think it does put a lot of pressure on these guys to feel like they become result-oriented and the expectations of winning and where they're ranked in the BCS become so big and clutters their mind in terms of their ability to perform well, focus and concentrate on having the poise that you need to play good football.
LSU wide receiver Michael Clayton says he's not worried about it. They just have to go out and play their game on Saturday.
I mean, that's what makes it so crazy at this time, you know, because people love to talk about it. And it's a reward, you know. It's what every team in the country is set out to get at the beginning of the season, make it to a BCS Bowl. And we're going to have the chance to play in one, hopefully. And we just want to come out and play hard. You know, whatever they give, that's what we're going to take.
Of course, all that is out the window if Oklahoma loses to Kansas State in the Big 12 championship. However, if the Sooners win and both LSU and USC lose, then it's most likely Michigan getting the Sugar Bowl nod to play the Sooners. Now, if Oklahoma, LSU, and USC lose, Oklahoma is still number one in the BCS. Then you're back to a fight for number two between Michigan and Georgia. Wolverines coach Lloyd Carr, wholly noncommittal.
We are excited about whatever opportunities we're presented with as we go forward.
Folks, that's insight. As for Georgia, preparing for the SEC championship game, Coach Mark Richt summed it up best.
It's been interesting for everybody to kind of guess and predict and what about this, and there's so many variables depending on how deep you want to think about what could affect the big picture. And there's a lot of games that none of us are playing in that could affect the big picture. So, I mean, I guess that's exciting for college football. And like for me, I just don't really have the time to figure it all out anyway.
Ain't that the truth? But then again, that's why we're here. And as for the debate / controversy / mess / headache, it isn't going away until Saturday night at the earliest. For Sporting News Central, I'm Doug Russell.
All right, Doug, terrific job. We appreciate it as always. And I think that music will be in my head for the remainder of the day.
Again, this is something that I've literally been talking about for almost 20 years. This is a portion of my radio show nationally on Sporting News Radio from January 1st, 2004.
Unless you are a fan of three teams, I am welcoming you aboard the USC bandwagon because you are a USC fan today. Why? Of course. It is because a Trojans win today will further expose, not that it needed it, but it will further expose the farce that is the Bowl Championship Series. Unless you're a fan of the Michigan Wolverines, unless you're a fan of the LSU Tigers, or unless you're a fan of the Oklahoma Sooners, then, of course, you're rooting for Michigan. Michigan fans, for obvious reasons, you never want your team to lose, and the other two teams in the Sugar Bowl, because if USC does lose, and most right-minded people, all right-minded people with the exceptions of the fans of those three teams, are hoping for a Trojans win. But if USC does lose, then the Sugar Bowl is the national championship game. Undisputed national championship game. Michigan, I mean, a Rose Bowl win would be a nice feather in their cap. There's no question about that. Rose Bowl win would be great for Michigan. But it doesn't do anything for the rest of us because it lets the BCS off the hook, and we just simply can't have that. I think LSU should be there. I don't think Oklahoma should be there, but they have a legitimate case. Again, another one-loss team, and there's three of them in elite conferences, USC, LSU, and Oklahoma. The coaches have already come out and said, USA Today has already come out and said, if USC wins this game and handily, well, look, they're the number one team in the country. The coaches say they're the number one team in the country. The writers say they're the number one team in the country, so they're the number one team in the country, right? Well, no, because the BCS computers or the BS computers or whatever you want to call them spit out the wrong teams. Spit out Oklahoma, spit out LSU. Of course, I have been touting for some time and have published the Russell Plan, available to you at no cost. And my plan, it's pretty simple. So here's what we do. Number one, first and foremost, because of the fact that they are now a basketball conference and not a football conference, you take the Big East out of the automatic bid pool, limit the number of non-conference games to two because four is just too many. You play your conference schedule as is. You play the lesser and second tier bowl games as is. And then you take the conference winners from the five big ones. The ACC, Big 10, Pac-10, SEC, Big 12, and give the winners of those conferences automatic bids to the BCS. And when I say the automatic bids, hey, let the conferences decide that. The automatic bid for the Big 12 this year didn't go to Oklahoma. It went to Kansas State because they won in the conference championship game. That's fine. If the conferences want to do that, whatever. I don't have a problem with that. Then you award three, because remember, we're taking the Big East out. So you have three at-large teams. One of those could be Oklahoma. Isn't it amazing that Oklahoma is in the national championship game as an at-large officially? Doesn't make any sense to anybody. But you award three at-large teams berths to the BCS. Those teams may or may not be from the five BCS member conferences. In other words, if Southern Miss ran the table, for example, or if Utah ran the table, or if Bowling Green or Miami of Ohio or anybody else from a quote-unquote lesser conference ran the table, okay, you want to go in the BCS, fine. But then you pair off the BCS bowls against each other in a national semifinal game. And your Rose Bowl would still be Pac-10 Big Ten because that's the way the gods wanted it. I think that was on the stone tablets that Moses took down from the mountains. You got your Sugar Bowl. I'd put the SEC against the ACC champion. The Orange Bowl, you could put the Big 12 champion against one of the at-large teams. And of the four bowl games, the four BCS bowl games, January 1st and 2nd, pair off the winners of the BCS bowl games against each other on a rotating basis. One year you'd have Rose Bowl against Sugar Bowl winner. Another year you'd have the Rose Bowl against the Orange Bowl winner. Just rotate them. Play the national semifinal the next week following the BCS bowl games. So that would be next week. Play the national championship game the Monday night, nine games later. Kind of as they do with the Super Bowl. So there you have it. That's the Russell plan of the BCS. It is perfect. It has no flaws whatsoever, and it makes everybody happy, right?
Fast forward to 17 years later, and maybe we're getting somewhere. Anyway, that's it for me today. Lots of NFL draft coverage this week, both here on the Doug Russell Podcast and on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee. I'll be in Thursday and Friday night with Bill Schmidt. Hope you can join us. As always, feel free to hit us up on our socials. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Doug Russell Pod. You can also search for us on Facebook and on YouTube for all of our shows and everything that we do, and also the Twitter, the Instagram, links to all of that. Very simple, one easy place. It is DougRussellPod.com. Again, DougRussellPod.com. Have a great week. We'll see you next time right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.